WKXL On the Road and our Explore New Hampshire series is brought to you in part by Concord Hospital, as well as the Concord Parks and Rec Department, the Greater Concord Chamber of Commerce, New England College, the Spradling Group, and Douglas Leonard and Garvey.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council, and also this fall by Carter Hill Orchard.
This is New Hampshire Now, 1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Chris, joining us for the program. This hour of New Hampshire Now is brought to you by New England College, as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health. And this segment of the program brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli. It's a national impact that's uniquely New Hampshire. For information, check out rathlaw.com. Also want to talk about Parker Education. Maximize your child's educational potential by checking out Parker Education. More information, go to parkereducation.com. In this segment of the program, we sit down with Representative Annie Custer. Impeachment, the inquiry into the impeachment of Donald Trump, and whether or not he committed obstruction of justice and other charges. That was taken up by Judiciary, the House Judiciary Committee, on Monday. Let's get the thoughts of Annie Custer. We're in Washington, D.C. at the Cannon Office Building, joined by Congresswoman Annie Custer here on Capitol Hill as we're meeting with members of both parties, senators and members of Congress, to talk about what's going on in D.C. as we've been focused a lot on the New Hampshire primary. And Congresswoman Custer, as always, great to see you.
Wonderful to have you here in my office, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate joining us for the program. And we'll start off with impeachment, which was a topic of discussion in New Hampshire, as well as here in D.C. with Corey Lewandowski appearing in front of the House Judiciary Committee. What were your takeaways from that?
Well, I was interested. I think the biggest bomb to drop was him being so cavalier in acknowledging lying to the media. He seemed to have no shame with that, which surprised me. I think it was pretty clear from the testimony that he did was put in the position by the president to obstruct justice. And I think the committee will go from here. But I thought it was a very informative day, and I was surprised by him being quite so cavalier with the truth. I think that's one of the casualties of these times that we're in, is that people are not being honest and truthful with the American people. And our democracy depends upon that.
As we do this interview, there's consideration, I guess, from Chairman Nadler of holding Corey in contempt. Is that something that you think should happen? And when you look at this environment, how strong do Democrats have to be, and how do you also have to mind, you know, decorum? Because it seems like, you know, the Trump administration and officials are playing by a different set of rules. They're going to do what they're going to do. They don't really seem to care if they're threatened with, you know, when they're subpoenaed and they're threatened with potential jail time, they're still not going to come. Whether it's being held in contempt, Corey doesn't seem to be too concerned about that. How do you make sure that, as a body, that you're respected? Because this could set a dangerous precedent. If Corey Lewandowski is a private citizen, can say, oh, I'm not going to answer any questions here. I'm just going to filibuster and yell at members and say they're ranting. And what is to stop me or anyone else as a private citizen from doing the same thing?
No, and I think this is the decision for the chairman and for members of the Judiciary Committee. And I've talked to some of them this morning, and this is what they're considering. Obviously, we do need to assert our oversight role as the we like to call it the first branch of government. I started to say the third. We're number one, Article One in the Constitution. And the Congress has an oversight role. That's what our founders intended, is this balance of powers between the three branches. And ultimately, I think this, like many of the decisions that are happening, this is unprecedented, uncharted territory. This administration seems to have total disdain for the constitutional powers of the United States Congress and our role in oversight of the executive branch. And I think I would not be surprised to see my colleagues in the Judiciary Committee take firm steps about issuing subpoenas and enforcing those subpoenas, and ultimately, if the administration objects to that approach, then they would take it up in the courts. Already, we've had a number of these issues taken up in the courts, and the courts have ruled in our favor. And so this is the beginning of the story, not the end of the story. But I was shocked by the disdain for the institutions of our democracy.
I think that you also got a preview as to if the impeachment process were to become formalized, it's currently an inquiry, something that you and Congressman Pappas have both supported, what it would look and sound like, as it was complete chaos at times. Even to start off the hearing, it was chaotic. Where are you in regards to impeachment as a whole? Do you want to see the process play out, or do you feel that after reading the Mueller report and after seeing this administration play out the way that it has, that the Democrats have no other option at this point?
Well, we're not quite there yet, but that is a distinct possibility. I was quite convinced by my reading of the Mueller report and the oath that I've taken as a member of Congress to the Constitution, as well as a member of the New Hampshire Bar to the Constitution, that crimes appear to have been committed. Let me say it that way. There's evidence that was collected by Mr. Mueller, and not only were crimes committed, but then in the course of the investigation of those crimes, that there was obstruction of justice. And frankly, I think what happened yesterday in the Judiciary Committee is a continuation of that obstruction of justice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the crux of the matter for the president. If they have nothing to hide, why is he going to such great lengths to obstruct the proper oversight role of Congress? That it doesn't add up. And so what I've come out for is to continue the investigation, but that will only be successful if the witnesses are forthcoming. And if they choose to continue to obstruct justice, then I think a decision needs to be made. And it will be in the first instance, by the Judiciary Committee, and then we will be voting on the floor of the House. And I'm a constitutionalist. Mm-hmm. I'm a lawyer. I believe in our Constitution. I believe in the framers. I believe that they were looking for a balance of power, and that they created Congress to have this oversight role for determining, keeping the administration, whatever administration it was, within the bounds of our laws. And they created the judiciary branch to interpret the laws. And so I think what's important, and this is what's difficult, frankly, is for the American people to be informed at every step. And that's what we need to understand is happening here. This administration does not want the American people to hear the evidence that Mr. Mueller, in his lengthy role, uncovered. Mm-hmm. And that's really the obstruction that is happening.
There's Congresswoman Annie Custer joining us here in her office at the Cannon office building on Capitol Hill. I am Chris Ryan. When I come down to D.C., I am always, you know, humbled by being here. And, you know, I'm talking about in the next segment about ceremony, which I sat in on, unveiling statue of Standing Bear, who most people don't know. We'll talk about that in the next segment of the show. But it's always very humbling to be in this place. But
it is for me every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the history to it is amazing. But, you know, when you think about Washington, D.C., from an outsider's perspective, there is a prevailing feeling that this body, whether it's Congress as a whole, the House of Representatives, or the Senate, is not doing its job in representing the American people, passing laws to make their lives better. And you look at the last two presidential elections, they both were demanding transformational change in two very different ways, but both were demanding that change. Do you feel, though, as you've been down here, that things are getting better, or are they getting worse in regards to the connection that exists between, you know, corporations, big pharma, and what happens in regards to laws that are passed?
So let me take it this way. With regard to corporations, big pharma being the best example, I think things are getting better, certainly in the Democratic House. I was in a meeting in my committee today, so I'm now on the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Mm-hmm. We handle the health care. Mm-hmm. I'm on the health subcommittee, so I've got a front row seat literally on this issue. And Democrats made a promise to address number one on our For the People agenda is bringing down the cost of health care, and we're doing that through bringing down the cost of prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
We are unveiling a bill tomorrow, so it'll be while you're in town, and you should, I think, 11 o'clock if you get a chance to go. And this is going to be negotiating the price of prescription drugs, particularly under Medicare, but the prices that are negotiated will also be available to people under private insurance and on the open market.
So this is a key issue where everyone agrees.
Issue.
Republicans, in theory, agree. The president has talked about lowering prescription drug costs. So this is a
this
prime
is one that
example.
Could be signed
exactly.
into law
exactly.
on the South Lawn
right.
of the White House.
Quick,
and we've been very clear that the president may take total credit for that, but if it helps to bring down costs for our mm-hmm. constituents, we are in the fight for them. And I've
so
talked
do you feel
about
it,
this.
It will reach, do you feel it will reach that result, or is it there's something going to arise which
it's become more and more difficult to follow the president's intentions, because he'll say one thing one day and do something else the next day. But my understanding is that they do embrace lowering the cost mm-hmm. of prescription medication. We're going to put a good bill out from the House that we're unveiling tomorrow. And what it's about, Chris, because this has come up in every single one of my campaigns, the American people are shocked that we do not negotiate a volume discount when it comes to the cost of prescription medication under Medicare. They don't understand why that happened. And frankly, the reason that happened is part of your lead-in, the power of the pharmaceutical companies mm-hmm. back during the George W. Bush administration, well before I came to Congress. And so the American people have been heard on this topic, and we agree that we should be negotiating a volume discount for a lower price. So this bill will set out a procedure for how the Secretary of Health and Human Services will negotiate that lower price. And one of the parameters that's interesting is that it will use the average international price. So it'll have a formula for, you know, that there are people in New Hampshire that drive to Canada because their drugs cost less. There, we're going to take the average international price, which is cheaper than the U.S., and then we're going to put that as a backstop to the negotiation. If they can't get a better price than that, then that's going to be the price. So that's what brings the pharmaceutical companies to the table. And we're going to take the most expensive medications for the Medicare system, mm-hmm. so the ones that cost the most and have the most people using them, mm-hmm. and we'll start there and start negotiating these prices. And then, as I say, the real feature of this bill is that it's not just for Medicare, although that's important. Seniors will pay less, taxpayers will pay less, but also private insurance companies that will be privy to the same lower price.
I want to ask you about health care as a whole, because this has been a huge topic, as you know, in the Democratic presidential primary, which you've been watching, obviously, very
yes.
closely. And it came up as well in an article I was reading about, Nancy Pelosi commented on it and said that, you know, it might be time for Democrats to basically stop talking about Medicare for All on the campaign trail, essentially. And I'm curious as to your perspective in regards to mm-hmm. that, where do you feel that the best way to change health care for the better is by doing what you're doing with prescription drugs, or by looking at aspects of the Affordable Care Act and improving upon those, as opposed to a widespread, sweeping, change everything Medicare for All type plan?
Well, what's interesting about Medicare for All, and let me say, I embrace the enthusiasm of people wanting to achieve universal access to health care for every American at an affordable price and at a cost that people can afford. So I'm with you on that. And I think this debate is a good thing to get people on board to that. What I object to is the notion that there's some switch down here in Washington, D.C., and we're all going to wake up in the morning in Canada. It's not going to happen as quickly and as smoothly as people
pretend. If we were starting our own country, Medicare for All would be a great idea.
A great place to start.
We're not starting our own country.
And I have to say, let me give a shout out to Bernie Sanders for being honest with New Hampshire voters and the American people. He said it's going to cost trillions of dollars in taxes, and middle class taxes will go up. And I think Elizabeth Warren's been great in New Hampshire. She's really improved her campaign and her performance substantially. But she really danced around this on the stage the other night in the debate
when
she was asked, "What is this going to cost?" Yeah. And I understand what she was trying to articulate is that your health care costs will go down, but she didn't want to use the words your taxes will go up.
Right.
And, you know, there was a moment there where Joe Biden turned to her and said, you should be honest with the American people.
Yeah.
So let me tell you where I am on this, because I want to be honest with the people in New Hampshire. I believe that we should have a public option is what it's called, that you should have a choice. When it comes to healthcare, I am pro-choice. You should have a choice as a consumer. If you would prefer not to get your health insurance through a private company, and I understand that, 97 cents on the dollar in Medicare goes to healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to pay for advertising and marketing and all these things that insurance companies do. So if you want that choice, I want a public option that you can buy into Medicare up to the age that it becomes free for your retirement. And what will happen, two things. One is we'll get a sense of how many Americans want that choice and choose it. They'll vote with their feet. And my point with this is that 70% of the American people get their health insurance through their employer, and they're on private insurance. 70%, Chris. So that's a lot of people for a mandate to kick them off tomorrow. So many of them are satisfied with it. But
the
other thing that will happen,
for some individuals, the costs may go up in terms of their taxes, and the deductibles won't meet that.
Right.
And it's not, maybe on average or aggregate, you know, she can say that, you know, you will save money, but that's not the case for everyone.
No.
And that's why the choice
is so
important.
And for some individuals, their employer is very generous, and they pay for most of it, and pay, you know, the premiums are reasonable.
Employer-based healthcare, every situation is different.
Exactly. Yeah. And so my point is, let's give the consumer the choice. But number two, and this is very important, we will create competition for the insurance companies. They will have to compete with a plan that 97 cents on the dollar goes to healthcare. So they will be forced to lower their premiums or improve their products. They won't get away with the woman I met down in Hudson at our town hall, Kathy, who pays $800 a month and then has a $6,000 deductible. That is not affordable health insurance. That she doesn't dare go to the doctor for preventative care. That's not what we are trying to achieve. And by the way, the other thing that's important right now, this administration is making every effort to sabotage the Affordable Care Act. And part of what we've done since January, taking over these committees, and in particular my committee, the Health and the Energy and Commerce Committee, Health Subcommittee, part of this, we've been on defense, if you will. We've been trying to shore up the Affordable Care Act. And let me give you one quick example. I'm very proud that I was chosen to carry the bill on the pre-existing conditions. Now, your listeners will remember that phrase from the Affordable Care Act. And one of the most important things, in addition to keeping young people on till age 26, was to make sure that people with pre-existing condition, i.e. most of us, other countries don't even have that expression. It's just called your medical history.
Right.
But that will be covered. What happened, the Trump administration, when they couldn't repeal the Affordable Care Act, they started chipping away at it. And they took very short-term health insurance and expanded it to a year and then a four-year, three renewals. And suddenly people are in products where they're getting bills for $200,000 for something that they assume would be covered. So we have passed legislation in the House to make sure that if you have a pre-existing condition, it will be covered.
Congressman Custer, as always, great to see you. I didn't even get to most of some of the questions.
And I didn't even get to Mitch McConnell is the problem because we keep sending the bills over and they're just sitting on his desk.
That is a huge problem. And also the Brett Kavanaugh situation, and we'll talk about that in the future. As always, appreciate your time.
Wonderful to be with you, Chris. Thanks for coming down.
Congresswoman Annie Custer here on New Hampshire Now. I am Chris Ryan. We'll come back with more after this.
That is Annie Custer. This is New Hampshire Now from D.C. This hour of the program presented by New England College as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health, and this segment of the program brought to you by Rathjung and Pignatelli as well as Parker Education.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council, and also this fall by Carter Hill Orchard.
WKXL On the Road and the Explorer New Hampshire series brought to you in part by the Concord Youth Hockey Association, Orange Leaf Concord, New Hampshire Healthcare Association, and PNN Automotive.